Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Reds put it to the Pirates again.
This one hit pretty good to right. Did he get another one? Going way back. That's way out of here. Jesse Winker to the last row of the seats. And how about Wink? Jesse Winker, with a wink of an eye, has two homers in this series. And he's given the Reds a lead. What a couple of days for the newest Red.
That might be a familiar voice to some of you. George Grand, for years on SportsCenter of ESPN, now on the Reds television network, with the call last night at PNC Park. All right, been looking forward to this one for a couple of weeks now. It is with great pleasure I bring in somebody I perceive to be the best at what he does. You get magazines that are out there all over the place that want to tell you about the upcoming college football season. Everything is so generic. Not Phil Steele's. His is so specific and accurate, people wait for it to come out. Phil, welcome. It is great to have you back.
Steve, how the heck are you, my man?
Doing really well. Doing really well. Another gem you put out this year. You know, it's really interesting. It used to be, when you and I were coming through, that the first magazine on the rack for football we'd grab, people wait for yours. That's it. That is the real compliment to you. I think they wait for yours.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Steve, and you're absolutely right. In fact, I remember 23 years ago, the first lesson that was given to me by Joe Del Poplo of Game Plan, who got me into the business, he took my magazine title and put it under his wing. He said, you've got to be the first one out at the newsstand, because everybody's going to buy the first one they see. Then they'll buy the second, then they'll buy the third, and once you get to that point, they're not going to buy you anymore. And that's why everybody comes out. You notice these magazines are coming out in the middle of May, Steve, and spring practices are not even over yet, and they're hitting the newsstands, whereas I can wait till June the 1st, wait till all the springs are over, wait till I've had my coaches' conversations, we get all the information right, and when it comes out it later than everybody else, about a month later, the folks that have had it before will always make sure they get it again.
Right, because one of the keys now is that is there a grad transfer? Is there a JUCO that people don't know about? And you're in a constant state, Phil, if I recall correctly, of always evaluating on a daily to weekly basis all year as to where teams are.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it helps to do the magazine after, not only after the spring practices are over, but after the coaches have had their post-spring interviews, because generally they'll sit a player down. Maybe the player doesn't like what he hears. That's when they transfer, most likely. So I think you'll find most of the transfers out are players that don't hear what they want in the post-spring interviews. By the time June 1st rolls around, we've captured all that. Only thing we missed this year was Bob Stoops, who beat me by about 7 days, but it wouldn't have changed my forecast either way, because I think taking them through the spring was a big thing. But for the most part, we usually get almost all those transfers put in there.
Yeah, let's get to a couple of people right away. I've marveled at what Ohio State has done, because they have repeatedly lost players early to the NFL draft, yet they've stayed right about in the same neighborhood. Now they have more all conference selections coming back than anyone else. How do you see Ohio State, Phil?
We know last year, Steve, Ohio State had just 6 returning starters, 3 on offense, 3 on defense. In fact, in my experience chart in a magazine, which takes into account numerous factors, Ohio State was number 128 out of 128 last year. So if there was a year that this team was going to slip, it was probably last year. And there they are making the playoffs. Now, maybe they made the playoffs a year too early, as you saw by that shutout loss to Clemson. But this year, 15 returning starters coming back. Much more more experienced team. And then the big addition to me, Steve, is Kevin Wilson, the offensive coordinator, coming in for being the head coach of Indiana. This guy did wonders at Indiana with two-star and three-star players, maybe one-stars. Now he's inheriting all this talent. And JT Barrett, back in 2014, was a legitimate Heisman Trophy contender when he got injured late in the season. I think that Kevin Wilson gets JT Barrett back to that level. Much more experienced team. You look at that defensive line, that's one of the best in the country. I rated number two. Linebacking core, DBs, everything is solid on this team. And when you look at the schedule, the only game that really concerns you as far as maybe being a toss-up game would be the Michigan game at the end of the year, which they have to play on the road. But Ohio State will be favored in all 12 games.
Yeah, they'll get Penn State, by the way, and they'll come in and play. Penn State will play them out there on the 28th. So you've seen Penn State make the transitions all the way through to get to this point. A, what have you thought about Penn State's ability to get back into the conversation? And B, what do you think of this current team James Franklin has?
Well, I will go through my conversations with Coach Franklin. I've talked to him every year, year one, two, three, and four now. And it's amazing. It's almost amazing, Steve. That first year I talked to Coach Franklin, we go through the one deep, and that's about it. You get to the second string, and you're like, well, we got some problems here. You're like, well, Coach, what are you going to do? He's like, I don't have the players. I don't have the scholarships. And it was really a situation where this was a thin, especially along the offensive line, a very thin Penn State team, one that didn't have a lot of players. Now I'm going through the interview with Coach Franklin this year, and we're on the defensive line as an example, and we get to the fourth team, these true freshmen coming in. You know, he'd play. I tell you what, first year, this kid's a starter. You know, and it's like, I can hear it, and you can see it just by the players he has. This is a deep Penn State team. In fact, I just did an article for ESPN.com. I'm working on an article that'll be released later this month, and it's talking about strengths and weaknesses. Well, I was very quick to name the strengths of Penn State. Weaknesses, their defensive backs are number 26 in the country. Yeah. That's the weakness. I mean, this is a team that's solid. The only reason I didn't pick them to win the Big Ten, to be honest with you, Steve, they have to play at Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to be playing just a teensy bit of revenge in that one. Plus, Ohio State gets Penn State the week after a whiteout home effort against Michigan. It's tough to put A-plus games back-to-back. So I see Ohio State winning that game, and that's why I picked Penn State second.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick depth story about Penn State. Jack Hamm and I would go to practice, and it used to be that we'd go out and Jack's going to look at linebackers right away, and it used to be Jack would look at the third team linebackers and say, "Boy, I really like him. I really like him." Well, then during obviously the sanction period, the two of us would look at the first team linebackers, and then the second group came out. And we both found religion. So that's that's the way it was.
Yeah, it's night and day, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, it's night and day. Now you go out there and you look at it now, and it's completely different. I got to ask you about USC, because obviously I had a good long look at them in person on New Year's Day. When you look at Sam Darnold and the cast around him and how they've overcome some of their depth issues, what do you like about USC?
They're another one of those teams that a lot to like about, because they had the lower scholarships a couple years ago. They've been building. And, last year when I talked to Coach Helton and we're going over the team, the one position, remember I told you I had those concerns with Coach Franklin pretty much over the entire second and third team the first year. But the one position that jumped out to me at USC was that defensive line. Extremely inexperienced last year. Now, they had talent, but they had no experience. And you look at who they played in their first four games last year. They played Alabama, Stanford, and Utah. And if you follow college football, those are three of the best run attacks in the country.
Yep.
And they had to play them in the first 4 weeks. Well, they opened up 1-3. Now, what I did see out of USC was, as the season went on, their defensive line really progressed. You go to the Washington game that they had to play on the road. I thought their defensive line dominated Washington's offensive line later in the year.
Agreed.
Then on the flip side of the coin, you look at the quarterback, Sam Darnold. Darnold didn't start till week four. They did lose that game, but he won his last nine. Darnold's got the size. He's got the arm strength. He's got mobility. And I watched every USC game this offseason just to get a little bit more about the team and Darnold. Well, about every team. I watch them all. But the amazing thing about Darnold, there's so many games, he's under pressure and it looks like he's going to throw the football away, and it goes and hits the receiver right between the numbers. That's a quarterback that probably is going to be the first pick in next year's NFL draft. They've got the running backs. They have the skill players. They're solid up front. I've got USC favored in all 12 of their games this year as well. It's a very good team. And one Penn State almost beat in a Rose Bowl, blowing a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and you know what? He reminds me of, not completely, but of actually Roethlisberger at that same age. He can move enough to still make plays for himself, and I'm impressed by him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Probably not quite as big and maybe as durable as Roethlisberger, but I give him an edge mobility wise over Roethlisberger. Yeah. While Roethlisberger could move, I think it's a threat with Darnold if he really wanted to focus on it.
That's a really good point. Really good point. I have to ask you about Michigan because obviously you mentioned the whiteout game. They're coming in here. The transition now from Brady Hoke's guys that so many were drafted to now the guys that Jim Harbaugh has been able to recruit and cultivate. What do you like about Michigan?
Well, you know, I've talked to a lot of folks around the country, and if you look at the numbers returning, four starters on offense, one on defense, you think it's a rebuilding year. But there's two factors I'm going to throw at you there. The first one is last year Ohio State had six returning starters, and things worked out pretty good for them. And the second is if you look at the positions in the front of my magazine, the top units, Michigan ranks in all eight of them. Mm-hmm. How, I don't even know if there's been a team that had just five returning starters that's ever ranked in all eight. Now, I'll give you an example, the defensive line.
Oh.
Michigan loses all four starters on the defensive line, so they're in bad shape, right? Well, they got Rashawn Gary at defensive end. He's 6'1", you know, he's 6'5", 290. He's with PS number one defensive lineman out of high school, got his feet wet as a true frosh. This guy's going to be an All-American either second or third team at the end of the year. Nose tackle, Maurice Hurst. Hurst turned down the NFL. Now, he was a backup last year, but Hurst had 4.5 sacks, 7 TFL. He's a beast inside. He'll be an All-American this year. They got Brian Monet, Chase Winovich, and a bunch of freshmen and true freshmen that are what I call VHDs backing them up. I actually rate them the number 9 defensive line in the country, despite the fact they lose all four starters. So that just gives you an idea of the talent that Michigan has. Now, Michigan schedule-wise, I don't like who they play and where they play them. Give you an example. Florida, right out of the box. If you have an inexperienced team, you don't want to play a veteran team like Florida, and they have to play them the first game of the season. Penn State's off a bye. It's a whiteout condition.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan's off a road game against Indiana, second straight road game. They play Wisconsin on the road. When do they play them? How about the week before Ohio State? And as we all know, Michigan-Ohio State, a little bit of a big football game there. And then, of course, the end of the season, they host Ohio State, and that's a big game. So they've got four very tough teams that they have to face and situations that they have to face them in.
We're so deep now into the 85-25 in terms of recruiting that the poll that starts out one way gets completely jumbled as time goes. We know how Penn State came off the grid and moved its way up. Give me a couple of teams, Phil, in your estimation that may not be on the grid at the moment, but we need to keep a close eye on that may have the ability to move from off the grid to into the mix.
I'll give you two. And keep in mind, my surprise team list in the front of the magazine is non-top 10 teams I think can make the playoffs.
Yep.
Almost every year it works out. Last year was Washington coming off a 7-6 season. They made the playoffs. So the top two teams this year, Steve, I'll start with number two. I'm going to go with Miami of Florida.
Yep.
And, you know, here's the shocking stat to me, Steve, is that when Miami joined the ACC, everybody thought, well, they're going to be in the ACC title game every year or every other year, right? They have not even appeared in one.
Right.
Well, I'm calling for them to get to one this year, and it's going to look like the old Miami Hurricane defense. I mean, their defensive line, downright nasty. I rate it the fourth best in the country. And last year, their linebacking core got wiped out. They lost two guys over the summer. They had to start three true freshman linebackers last year. Now, all of them were what I call VHDs, very highly touted. Yep. They all did pretty good. Now they've got those three guys are all veteran sophomores, and they're all still VHDs. That's one of the best linebacking cores out there. That's going to be tough to move on that defensive front seven. The O-line looks solid. They've got weapons at running back and receiver. The only question mark is quarterback. That's a big question mark, but believe it or not, the national champ the last 7 years is had a first-year starting quarterback five times. So, you know, it happens. The first-year quarterbacks can have success, and they don't have to go out and win the game at Miami. When you got that defensive front seven, punt's not a bad word because you're going to get the ball back and probably in better field position. The second team to talk about is Florida. And with Florida, they've actually made it to the SEC title game each of the last 2 years. They got beat by Alabama, yes, but they had their backup quarterback basically the entire second half of both seasons. And if you look at Florida's offense the last 2 years, it has actually been below average. Florida has only averaged 22 and 23 points per game. Well, this year, they've got three capable quarterbacks. They bring in DeShone Kizer from Notre Dame. They've got Felipe Franks, the big 6'6", 230-pound QB. And then they also have Luke Del Rio, who started last year, looked good, and then he got injured. All three of those guys are back. They've got Scarlett Thompson and P. Ryan back at running back at the receiver position led by Callaway. I think they've got their best receivers in 5 to 10 years. That's been a problem at Florida recently. The offensive line's one of the best in the SEC. The defense, not quite up to last year's standards, but still a top 20 unit. And they have my number three special teams. And then the key thing, you know, we talked about Michigan's schedule, who you play and where you play them.
Right.
Florida's three road games this year are at Kentucky, at Missouri, at South Carolina. Those are the only three games they play in an opposing stadium. They play Michigan out of the box, and they play Georgia and Jacksonville, and they've beaten Georgia the last 3 years. I think Florida's got a chance, and if they get there with their number one quarterback for once, I think Florida could be pretty good. I see them getting 30-plus points on offense. I see them with the defense, and I think you're going to see Florida as a potential contender for the playoffs this year.
Yeah, what's interesting, people have to remember, the LSU situation last year allows them to only have three road games this year. That's the big thing people have to remember about that. One final question, I'll let you go, because I mean, I could do this for hours, and I know you do about a dozen of these a day. So, and that'll be this. On a Saturday, it's really impossible for you to get to a stadium and watch a game. I said, hey, Phil, let's go down and watch Ohio State, Michigan. Let's go up to Ann Arbor this year. How important is it for you to be locked in on as many games and on as many screens as possible on a given Saturday, because you're constantly updating what you're doing?
The last Saturday I went to see a college football game was back in 1981. So that'll tell you a little bit about it. And you take a look at my setup here. I got 12 games. And as you touched on, Steve, if I was to go to Columbus, you're talking about, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour drive there, get in the game. You're talking about seven lost hours. You'd be talking about 24 games I missed. And
that's right.
I would be behind the entire week trying to catch up. And so I'm pretty much plunked in my office, 12 TVs, 12 games, watching them all day long on Saturday. Sometimes I have to, you know, get those ESPN3 games on. There's 14 or 15 games going on at once. What a change from when I was growing up, by the way, when there was only one game on TV usually at a time. But
You and me both.
It's a tough life, Steve, having to sit there and watch 14 games all day long, but somebody's got to do it.
It's awful, Phil. Awful. you know what's interesting, though, is last night, just a quick story before you go, and that's, I actually watched the end of the Ohio State-Michigan game on ESPNU last night. Now, why did I do that? Because, obviously, I was broadcasting the Penn State-Michigan State game. I never saw it.
There you go.
See, and that's the difference. That's the first time I actually watched it was last night.
And what did you think of the call at the end?
On the Barrett play? You didn't make
You see, it all depends. It looked like it was short, and it was an amazing game all the way around. I mean, there was so many ebbs and flows in the game. But like you, Steve, I do the same thing. I've got all these games DVR'd. My goal is before this season starts is to finish watching all the games the second time this summer, and then I'm going to DVR all the games from this year again. Because even when I'm watching 12 games, I can't watch them all 12 like you're watching one.
Right.
So you know, when I'm exercising, I'll be watching one game, and you pick up some things you might have missed.
Well, see, and people ask me when I get ready for a season. I do all chart work for all the games I do, football, basketball, in April and May, and then I'll watch tape after that to see how it matches up with the chart. I mean, I kind of, it's not the same as you do, but it's, you know, it's a little different, but some parts are similar.
Yeah, I love it. And that's the key is preparation, preparation, preparation. And Steve, you do a great job of it, and it shows.
Absolute pleasure, Phil. Thanks so much. I know you do a lot of these during the course of the day, especially this time of the year. Thanks for the few minutes you carved out for us today. I really appreciated it.
Hey, it was a great pleasure, Steve. And I love talking to somebody that, you know, we're cut from the same cloth in terms of preparation and the love of the game. So it was great talking to you once again.
Thank you, Phil. Phil Steele. What do you think, Sean? Got a little knowledge in that head of his?
That's a mic drop. He probably has 11 more to go now.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I find him just amazing.
It just reels that info, bam, bam, bam. One thing after another. It's just absolutely impressive.
Well, that's why he's considered the best. And I think he is. you can't do anything. If you want to do anything well, you can't do it half-hearted. Now, you have to have, obviously, a balance in life to do things and so forth. All right, and nobody appreciates that more than me. But if you're going to throw yourself into something and do it well, you really do have to throw, when it comes time to work, when it comes time to work, you have to work the whole thing. He works the whole thing.
Now, there's just so many fans that appreciate everything he does. And just going on his Twitter feed, seeing people just doing little screen grabs of the copy of their magazine, whether they're sitting out in the back deck. Oh, this is the one thing I have to grab before I go on vacation. So, yeah, I'm sitting poolside or at the beach. You know, you got the sand and the ocean in the background. And what's there? What's there right in the forefront of the photo? Phil's magazine.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's the only one. It's the only one I get. The only one I trust. It's the only one I do. Never anyone else's. It's always been his. I'm not a big person. I don't walk by the magazine rack and go, oh, good, Street and Smith's out. No, if his is out, I buy it. I order it. So, all right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Roxy Bernstein of the Pac-12 coming up in the next half hour. Jim Delaney on the show tomorrow. On a day where we have found out everything from Phil Steele, where I could have talked to him for like 3 hours. And we also found out the suit after forgetting his wife's birthday in the first week of May, completely forgot about the day he was returning to Shikellamy in glory.
3 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah, but he took the day, off. He put in for a vacation day. I mean, knowing Roger and Drew, they just accepted it and said, fine, we'll find somebody else. Fine by us.
Plug and play. We'll keep going.
We're good. We got Cotrello back. We're in good shape here. So much for that return in a blaze of glory. Forgot all about it on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Big announcement. A big announcement. Wow, that's on tomorrow's show?
And to put the I-team on that.
Doesn't involve a suit, does it?
You'll be the first to know when I find out.
Wow. All right. That's tantalizing, huh? All right. This day in sports history. And my apologies. The sports bozo of the day. That's where the music comes in. There we go. All right, I'm going through the SEC. I was going through the announcing pairings. Now, this guy may be really good. I don't know. But you're going to parlay something into an analyst job. It's the top team. Now, Tom Hart, who's been on this show before, and I consider Tom a friend. Tom is the play-by-play guy for the SEC Network. He replaces Brent Musburger. Okay. And they took Jesse Palmer, and since Danny Cannell didn't have his contract renewed, they moved Jesse Palmer to the studio. Did you see who they came up with, the color analyst?
I did not hear about this.
Okay. Jordan Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers' brother. Now, Jordan Rodgers does have certainly a deep football background. In fact, he played for James Franklin, quarterback. But he's best known for The Bachelorette. Really? Now, he may be great. I'm just saying, don't you have to start at some spot and then work your way to the top spot? Oh, well. Who knows? All right.
Roxy Bernstein joins us. Roxy with the Pac-12 Network. So we're going to talk some Pac-12 football here. Although I think Roxy's been doing a lot of baseball this summer. Roxy, where are you right now? You're in California, someplace else, New England? Where are you?
Steve, I'm actually in Boston, believe it or not, of all places.
Getting ready.
I got baseball tonight for ESPN Radio.
Oh, beautiful. Were you at the game last night?
I wish I was.
Hey, I was going to say.
I got to town. It's funny. I was watching the game on the plane last night, and I got to town at probably around the seventh or eighth inning. And then I just figured, you know, Boston's got the late lead. There's no way Kimbrel's going to blow the game, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm a Red Sox fan.
and then I get to the hotel, and then I meet some of our crew across the street to just grab, like, something to eat and a drink real quick. And the game's still on. I'm like, what the heck happened? How did Kimbrel blow this? And then you get the dramatics and the walk-off. What a wild game. The shame is that we're doing tonight's game and not last night's game.
But you know what? You and I both know they're all different.
That's true.
They're all different. Tell me a little. I know obviously we want to talk about a little bit about football, but I know even though you're getting ready for baseball. But I have to get, what do you think the overview is of the Pac-12 in your opinion coming into this year?
I think there's a lot of unknowns about the Pac-12 this year. And look, the Pac-12, I think, had a terrific season a year ago with Washington getting to the playoff.
Yeah.
And USC, that dramatic Rose Bowl win, which I know you guys know well about.
Yeah.
So I think it was a big step forward for the league to get a team into that college football playoff again. And then we'll see, you know, what happens this year. But there's a lot of questions about those teams, about Washington, about USC going into this year. It certainly was an interesting year. We've had a couple of coaching changes in the Pac-12. But I think it was a successful year last year, and I think we're headed for another fantastic year here in 2017.
Obviously, before I went out to do the Rose Bowl game, I watched a lot of tape of USC. And then, of course, seeing Sam Darnold in person. I'll be honest with you, Roxy. I mean, he really has, quote, the look. And so, and I know he was hurt last year, but so does Rosen. I mean, what do you think of the two quarterbacks?
I think that legitimate top five prospects, both of them,
yeah,
be taken that high in the draft. And you saw Sam up close and personal in what he did in that Rose Bowl game. And the whole dynamic for USC changed when he was inserted. Max Brown was the starter last year.
Yeah.
And it didn't go well early. They got blown out by Alabama. And then Clay Helton decided to make the change. And what a turnaround it was, because the Vultures were swarming over Clay Helton. People were getting to run him out of L.A., and then the team caught fire. They won their last nine, and all of a sudden Clay Helton is a genius where they're ready to fire him after 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was amazing because Brown's going to be the starter at Pitt this year, it looks like. And then there's Rosen, because I've talked to Tom Bradley enough, where obviously he's had to go up against him in practice, and obviously he gets a good view from the box when during games. What does his reappearance on the scene, what can it mean for UCLA? Because obviously Moore is in a tough spot right now.
He is, and it's fair. People expect wins, but if you look at how that season crumbled last year when Rosen got hurt, they need to keep him healthy, first and foremost. They've recruited very well, especially on the defensive side, but there's a lot of questions about UCLA. Can they establish the run, which is a big problem for them? Now, people were able to load up the box last year on UCLA when Rosen went out, so they have to keep him healthy. The offensive line needs to do a better job at keeping him upright. And it's fair that people are putting Jim Moore on the hot seat, I believe, because say what you want about last year, they still have underachieved a little bit, where I think this year, with the way they've recruited, there's a lot of talent on the defensive side. That defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. Just a question of what can they do offensively for UCLA to come around, and I think they're pretty confident going into this year. And how big of a game is that week one when they host Texas A&M?
Right out of the gate. I mean, right out of the gate. And again, you're talking about Moore on one side, you got Kevin Sumlin on the other side, and both of them have bigger stakes than just the game because of where they both are.
And it was a thrilling game last year when these two teams hooked up in the opening weekend. So I would expect that to be a pivotal game, and like you alluded to, for both sides considering what's at stake. Because, as we all know, the first game of the season really sets the tone for how that season can go.
Roxy, what about Stanford? What was it about Stanford last year that didn't quite click, in your opinion? What did they need to do to get back?
Well, it'd be nice for them to get Christian McCaffrey back. We know that's not happening.
No.
I don't know, Steve, if there was a player that was more valuable to his team in college football than McCaffrey was to Stanford last year. And you look at the way they finished the year and the way he played down the stretch. And Stanford had some questionable games last year. You kind of scratch your head when they got blown out in Seattle by Washington. Some curious losses that they had a year ago. But now I think that David Shaw is got to keep – we'll find out what's going on with the quarterback at Stanford, because Keller Chris hurt his knee, significant injury. We'll see where he's at when the season begins. Is Bryce Love ready to step up and be the every-down back for Stanford? Are they going to go committee? The one thing I will tell you about the Cardinal is the tight end, which we've seen figure prominently with in the past, guys like Levine Toilolo, Zach Ertz, Kobe Fleener.
Yep.
The tight end will be heavily involved again this year in the Stanford offense, which has been a huge boost for them. When they've had their successful teams, when they're going to Rose Bowls and competing for conference championships, the tight end was an integral part of what they did, and I believe we're going to see that again this year.
Sleeper in the Pac-12 that we should keep an eye on early to see if they're making progress toward being very good.
Washington State.
Yeah.
I think that's a team with Luke Falk back. I know that Mike Leach lost two top receivers in Gabe Marks and River Craycraft, but they've recruited very well at that position. Mike Leach said last week at Pac-12 Media Day that this is the fastest group of wide receivers he's brought in since he's been at Washington State. And kind of an anomaly for a Leach offense, they were able to run the football last year. And they have a good offensive line, and they have some solid play on the defensive side. They create a lot of turnovers. I know Washington's the favorite in the North, and Stanford is supposed to be right there with the Huskies, but I would keep an eye on Washington State.
All right, so instead of Sale and Carrasco tonight, you've got Trevor Bauer and Rick Porcello. So there you go.
Yeah, so we're probably due for a 2-1 game after we had Sale against
Carrasco last night.
Yeah. That goes into a high-scoring affair. So
and suddenly one of them's carrying a no-hitter with a 1-0 lead into the eighth inning. You'll think of this conversation.
Exactly.
Roxy, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Great broadcast tonight.
Thank you very much. Anytime, Steve.
Roxy Bernstein joining us from Boston. He's also a critical part of the Pac-12 network. That's why we had him on to, again, preview the Pac-12 for us. We've been trying to get to as many conferences as possible with Phil Steele doing the big overview. Jim Delaney tomorrow on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Tried to cover a wide range here so far with between Phil Steele, Roxy Bernstein, got Jim Delaney tomorrow, Dave Revson on yesterday. We had Dave Hunsinger from Oklahoma State on talking about the Big 12. So we've tried to cover as many conferences as we can along the way. And we're not done yet, obviously. We're going to get more on as the week goes. But, you know, to get Jim Delaney on tomorrow will be, I find, will be very informative. Because then of all the interviews that we'll do in the overall picture of Penn State, he's the guy that has more influence than anyone else that we will talk to this week. Because he's the one that is the genius behind the TV contracts that they have. Then obviously, you know, any commissioners, you know, you can ask Gary Bettman. You're not going to be warmly received wherever you go. But if you're in the, you know, and if you're in the business of this thing, then you understand overall the incredible pluses that in his 28-year tenure he's brought to the table. And one of them, of course, is coming up at the end of the month. And we're coming up on what will be the 10th anniversary of the Big Ten Network. Big Ten Network, which that's his baby, has meant so much to every sport. It used to be you had to cobble together a network of stations in order to carry games where you, the viewer, had to find where the game happens to be. Well, it doesn't happen anymore. And not only that, it has meant so much to hockey, wrestling, baseball, men's, women's, soccer, field hockey. I mean, it's meant so much to all of them because now they're getting coverage they would never have had before. Never. I mean, before the Big Ten Network, how much of any of that did you watch on TV at any given time? At any given time, how much? Hardly any. And because of that, which because ESPN said, he said, well, fine, we'll just start our own network. And they kind of laughed him off a little bit. They're not laughing now. Put it together, Fox owns 51% of it. Now you got the Fox TV contract coming in. He's been important in what's happened with the college football playoff after the BCS. He has had a great feel over the years, Jim Delaney has, for understanding you within the parameters of the politics in college football, that you have to crawl a little bit BCS before you get to a college football playoff. And the steps may not have been quick enough for people along the way, yet he's been smart enough to understand the landscape to know you got to crawl before you run. So, there you go. He'll be on the show tomorrow.
And he's got a smile on his face today with four teams in the Big Ten ranked in the coaches' poll, the preseason top 10. Not too shabby.
Well, but again, that makes a big difference in terms of the, you know, he has the footprint, as I mentioned before, of, look, he's got Lincoln, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Madison, Chicago, Des Moines. He's got Indianapolis, Detroit, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati. He's got Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Washington, New York City. That's in his footprint. Now you add in a winning brand and some exciting players within that winning brand. Well, it couldn't have happened timing-wise at a better time for the Big Ten because you've got a footprint that has so many major markets in it, combined with great traditions, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Nebraska. I mean, you've got some great deep-seated traditions in this conference. You know, you combine that with what you're doing in basketball, Michigan State's probably going to be the number one ranked team in basketball coming up this year to start the season. mean, between Miles Bridges and Nick Ward and Joshua Langford, you know, who's going to return more than Michigan State will? So the timing of all this could not have been better. So you have to have great footprint, great brand loyalty, but also with teams that are exciting and bring a semblance of excitement to the table that you believe that people want to watch. Those are great great negotiating chips when you go into the table. And, you know, and timing was right. You also have a guy that understands the landscape.
And you brought up brand loyalty when we had John U. Bacon here on the show last month, just talking about the total number of fans that root for Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan alone. And Pac-12 can't even match up with that.
No. You don't have that. There's a deep-seated loyalty among Wisconsin fans, a deep-seated loyalty among Northwestern fans. I mean, Illinois, Indiana, I mean, it's there. Beyond just what Penn State has done, Michigan and obviously Ohio State, Michigan State's like that. But timing was right. We're going to talk to him about that. Also, it's going to be interesting to see, and I'm going to bring this up with him when I have him on the show tomorrow. Because the Big Ten, look, and Jim Delaney's a Jersey guy, and as I think people know, I grew up in Connecticut, so I've always understood, and I know he has, obviously, about what Madison Square Garden means. You know, what it means. You know, to get in there and to watch a game, see a game, what the Garden means. Well, in order to do that, they had to accommodate the schedule, which meant there were going to be two Big Ten games in a 48-hour span in December, first weekend of December. What I want to know from him is how interested is he to see those two games play out in December, and that regardless of where and when the Big Ten tournament is played, would they consider playing those two conference games in December to hype interest? Could it be permanent? And, you know, here's the other interesting part. Have you noticed this? We had somebody jump in the studio earlier, but Jim Delaney has been commissioner for 28 consecutive years. He never took a sabbatical.
Very true.
Not one time. Penn State basketball, 36 years. It was really funny. When the next season came up, I did it. Did you notice that? I mean,
smooth sailing, straight through.
I didn't understand we could all start making our own schedules.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.